Well, but I'll just come in first, but I am astonished that Lord Russell should attach any value at all to a statement of that kind. That's just the kind of agreement, or alleged agreement, that I think the Soviets have never carried out and never will. And I would remind him of a thing called the Kellogg Pact, which was very similar to the sort of statement that he wants the Americans and the Russians to sign now. It proved to be not worth the paper it was written on. Everybody solemnly pledged themselves never to go to war again or use warlike weapons, and look what
happened. Well, I think we should return.
I entirely agree with you about that, and I shouldn't attach any importance to this unless I thought that both sides honestly were convinced of this thing. Otherwise, I think it's just like the
Could I promise that we'll come back to an assessment of Soviet motives when we look at disarmament? But I want to be sure we look a little further at what's happening to the Labour Party.
Yeah.
Because here I think, whatever distinguished individuals may say about unilateral disarmament, we have apparently the very real possibility of one of the two major political parties in this country committing itself to unilateral disarmament. Now, I think Mr. Gaitskill owes it to us to say how near this prospect appears to be with the conference coming up in October of the Labour Party.
Well, what I will do is to try and make perfectly plain what the issues are here. As far as the Executive Committee, the leadership of the Labour Party, and indeed of the Trade Union Congress is concerned, and the Parliamentary Labour Party by an overwhelming majority, this is our view. Namely, first, that of course we must put absolutely top priority the strengthening of the UN and ultimately world government as the only final solution of this problem. Secondly, that we must continue, and here I don't think there's any disagreement between any of us, to do everything in our power to achieve multilateral disarmament. I'll come back to the Pentagon later. Thirdly, however, that the UN being what it is, with the veto, with the division of the world into two blocks, you cannot expect the Security Council to defend, or the UN to defend, any country that is attacked. And therefore, because of that, you have to have allies of your own. And we believe that NATO was formed for that reason, and has been a major force in preventing war, and that we should remain in NATO. On the other hand, we take the view, we also say that so long as the Soviet Union possesses nuclear weapons, then the Western alliance somewhere should have them too.
And do you also say in your official position that Britain should agree to have American bases?
Coming to that,
yes,
if I may, Bob. Then we say, on the other hand, so long as the West has the power of retaliation, therefore the deterrent theory applies, as far as we are concerned in Britain, that is a different issue. I agree with Russell there. The question of what Britain does and what we do in the international, so what the West does, must be distinguished. Now, we believe that the time has come for Britain to give up the idea of having their own independent nuclear deterrent. And that time, indeed, has been forced upon us, so to speak, by the decision of the government, however, in our view, a right decision, to abandon the Blue Streak rocket. To put it in another way, when you're discussing the whole immensely complicated field of rockets carrying hydrogen bombs, we have to face the fact that America spends on research and development in this field alone more than the whole of our defense expenditure. And in these circumstances, we think it is foolish to compete with her. And here I agree with Boothby that we should leave the provision of the nuclear deterrent to the United States, the remaining members of NATO ourselves.
And allowing American bases to continue in this country, nuclear bases.
On the basis question, this is our position. It is not a matter of principle that you either say to the Americans, no bases, or you say to the Americans, take anything you like, bring anything you like. Obviously, you must discuss this on the basis of the merits. Now, we are against the Thor missiles. That, as it happens, is not an American base, because the Thor missiles are manned by British troops. But we think that they are a peculiarly foolish and vulnerable weapon, a first strike weapon. They could be eliminated immediately, and we've always been against them on those grounds. But as far as the bases are concerned, it's a matter of negotiation. But I would certainly, could not remain, in my opinion, in an alliance and refuse to do what you believe to be militarily necessary for that alliance.
But now, it's this position you've outlined, Mr. Gateskill, that appears to be crumbling to outside observers within the whole labor movement. It appeared to be crumbling at the Trade Union Congress meeting in September, and there are many predictions that it's going to be overthrown in October at the Labor Party conference. Now, what is going to be your position as leader of the Labor Party if the position you're fully committed to is overthrown at the Labor Party conference?
Well, now you're asking me the sort of question, Mr. McKenzie, that you're almost bound to ask me in a radio interview immediately preceding the conference.
I hope for that opportunity.
I think, however, my attitude and my position on this is sufficiently well known. It was even referred to in the opening remarks. But I suggest we keep to the Labour Party's policy and not what the present leader of the Labour Party is going to do in certain hypothetical conditions.
But may I ask just to push one little point? At the moment, the strategic American Air Command's frontline bases are in this country.
Yes.
And it seems likely that if we are to be able effectively to deliver the deterrent weapon, that must continue at least for some time to come. Mm. I would agree with you and admit that this is probably only a temporary problem,
yes,
covering the next 2 or 3 years only. Ultimately, I suppose we shall have these horrible Sputniks floating round, each one loaded with an atomic bomb, which can be ordered to home on a particular base. One of them might fall down by accident, and that would be most unfortunate for all concerned. But for the next 3 or 4 years, I should imagine it will be necessary if we are to match the Russians. And coming back to my balance of power, to match the missile strengths of the Russians, we must have the front line of SAC here in this country. Would you agree that that's necessary? I think it is necessary.
I think it probably is. And I said earlier on, if it is militarily necessary in the interests of the alliance, we could not, in my opinion, refuse it.
Not a moral
we can
issue.
Make our conditions.
It's not a moral issue.
Not a moral issue.
It's not a moral issue, no. It isn't
but
a moral issue.
But isn't it perfect?
Well,
may I just say one other thing? Sorry.
Because I might be allowed to say a few words.
May I just finish with him on the Labour Party and the TUC?
Yes,
I only want to remind him that the Trades Union Congress, in fact, endorsed the statement on defence, which I was trying very briefly to expound just now.
But
and
by a smaller
it's
majority,
quite true,
by a smaller majority than the, than the
mind,
other
they
by
endorsed
a trick.
It.
Yes,
they
by a dishonest it. Trick.
Not in the least a dishonest trick, on the contrary. I
by
won't
a silly trick.
Allow myself to be drawn, not a silly trick
a
either, I won't
trick.
Allow myself to be drawn into a discussion of the exact meaning of certain resolutions and what they mean and why they were put forward in that form. But there's more than one thing to be said about dishonesty in this matter.
I think we've got to turn now to look very briefly at the position, the official British position on this whole matter. Now,
Lord,
look,
I wish you would allow me to make a few statements.
Yes, indeed.
I want to.
If you can lead us back into Lord Boothby and the official British position, which you are perfectly at liberty to attack, let's hear that too.
Well, I want to talk a little about the Labour Party and this issue. It is generally assumed in the press that if the Labour Party goes unilateralist, it's done for and won't get a majority for God knows how long. Now, my own belief, and this is based upon a good deal of knowledge of opinion, is that that's the exact opposite of the truth. I think the Labour Party has been losing in recent years because it didn't stand for anything much. And I think that the young especially, of whom I know a great many, I have a feeling that it would be rather nice to be allowed to grow up, and that if the present policies of the world continue, they have very little chance of reaching maturity before they're dead. And that feeling is very, very widespread, and a party that appealed to it would, I think, before long sweep the country. That is my quite deliberate opinion, based upon an astonishing growth of that way of looking at things.
Well, I can only say that I don't agree
no,
with that.
No,
I disagree with that. But in any event, this is an issue of such profound importance that I don't think we should make up our minds on it according as to whether we think this young person or that is moving this way or that. If I think, as I do, that the policy you're advocating is profoundly dangerous, then I'm going to oppose it.
But look, every policy is dangerous.
Yes, but I think your policy is even more dangerous. It's as dangerous with respect as the policy you advocated before the last war, which was one of appeasement to Hitler.
Well, I think
you know that's true.
There's danger we go back now too far, I think, if we do that. I want Boothby to say very briefly how the official government position, the government he used to support before he became an independent, how it differs from the position that the Labour Party, the official position the Labour Party still holds.
Some point, too, I want to say something in answer to Lord Russell on one or two points.
We'll give you a blanket reply after we've heard from...
Well, I think from a purely practical point of view, the government's position doesn't greatly differ from Gatescourt's position.
Oh, but they want to keep the nuclear...
They don't make it clear what they want. You see, they say they want us to be a nuclear power, but at the same time, in fact, they abandon that. They've given up, as Gatescourt said, the blue streak weapon, and at the moment, we are not a nuclear power. Now, I would be very reluctant to see us ever becoming a nuclear power again. I want to get right in with the United States. Admittedly, it throws, as Mrs. Roosevelt has said, a great responsibility for the United States. Well, I'm afraid as the great power and the only great power in the Western Alliance, that's the responsibility they've got to accept. We accepted it. After all, in the 19th century, it was British sea power that really kept the peace of the world.
Yeah.
I believe in the 20th century, it's American nuclear power that is going to keep the peace of the world, that we should accept that. I would give all the advice, scientific advice, assistance, bases to the Americans that they require, but I wouldn't attempt to set ourselves up as an independent nuclear power, as de Gaulle wants to do with France, for one quite simple reason, amongst others, we can't afford it.
Yeah.
We simply haven't got enough money to do it. Now, I think in practice, if not in theory, that is the government's position. You see, the great thing about the Conservatives is, and that's why they're always elected in this country, they don't have theories. They don't have these policies that Lord Russell advocates. They don't have anything, except they do go on, purely empiricist from their point of view, and do what seems to be best at any given moment. And if things are going a bit better than they were, as quite often they do and were at the last election, they win the election. It's this awful thing of pinning yourself down to specific, concrete, idealistic policies, which probably will never be carried out. That's the misfortune of the Labour Party. And if a government doesn't need to do this, why an opposition should think it's necessary to do so is beyond
that's
their comprehension.
Profoundly important and different problem.
I only want to come back to the paper that you said you wanted to see signed. Quite aside from signing a paper of that kind.
That is each side renouncing nuclear weapons.
Each side renouncing, yeah. But you added.
I didn't say they should renounce it. I said
no.
They should recognize that was the greatest misfortune that could happen.
You said that in the paper we would recognize this was a nuclear war was the greatest misfortune that could happen, and that in preference to that, either side winning would be better. Yes. Now that I would not be willing to sign. And I doubt if you could get it signed by most of the people of the United States. On the other hand...
Do you mean that most people would think it better there should be no human beings than that?
I think most people in the United States, perhaps partly because they do not know or really realize that there would be no human beings, but in any case, they would say... If we have to be dominated by the Soviet Union, yes. We would rather be wiped out. And I think, I'm sorry, but I think that is the majority opinion still.
It would be the Soviet Union also that would be wiped out. I mean, the thing you've got to face is, would you rather have no human beings at all existing or have worldwide dominion of the Soviet government?
Oh, no, with great respect, you know, this is not the question.
This is not the question.
This is the whole point, really. You see, we don't believe that is the alternative. We believe it's possible to have both freedom and peace,
so long as
we retain in the West the nuclear deterrent. And that is the main difference.
No, that isn't the difference. You misunderstood what I meant. What I was simply putting this alternative, if you had to choose between there being no human beings and there being a universal dominion of the Soviets, if you had that choice, which would you choose?
Yes, but I think the questions we should discuss are the real questions, not the hypothetical questions.
Well, he's put a hypothetical question, Lord Russell, which I would rather like to answer. He hasn't always in his writings in the past taken that high an opinion of human beings as such. He's now giving them tremendous importance. Judging by their behavior, in the course of the last 50 years, there are moments when I'm not at all sure in my own mind that it wouldn't be better if the whole thing backed up, because they're behaving like lunatics most of the time. And the 1939-45 war was a piece of raging, hideous lunacy. And I should not like to see it repeated. But therefore, I would like to ask his hypothetical question straight to answer it. I would rather see the whole thing blown up much than turned into a communist world. I mean, if that was the alternative, I'd say, well, let's go on somewhere else and see if we can't do better there than we can here. But what we are trying to do, those of us who think like, I think, basically Gatesfield and myself and Mrs. Roosevelt, and is to try and stop that happening, and, and you, to try and stop happening. You think one course is more dangerous, we think the other one is safer. But our object, after all, is to save the human race, although I doubt sometimes myself if it deserves it.
In other words, we have come back to the point that it's a balance of risks.
It's a balance of risks. Yes. There's no question about that. Yep. But I don't think any signed paper would remove that risk.
What I think would remove the risk would be a genuine belief on the part of governments that was a thing to face.
Well, I would like to say that I think, I cannot speak for our present administration. I do not happen to be a Republican, and I do not happen to be on the inside of information. But when you say you cannot agree with Pentagon policies, I think sometimes you have to balance what you hear about the influence on an administration of the army, which is practically what the Pentagon means, and the general feeling of the country. I would say that the people of our country would not be in agreement if the policy was one of aggression. You say that the general opinion is that the United States is in favor of war. I would say the United States was opposed to war and anxious to find ways. Now, at the present time, we still, a certain number of us and powerful people, believe that this balance of military power must be kept. I am hopeful that we are going to find ways, and one of the things that worries me is that we do not think more about the fact of how we move towards mutual total disarmament, because in the end, that is the only safe thing for us all. And I think much thought everywhere should be brought to bear on even the smallest first move that can be made. I would like to see any little step forward. And I think that is the attitude of the American people. And I am willing to acknowledge that the Pentagon is perhaps, naturally, being military people, they may have more military ideas than I have, for instance, or than some of the other people. But I cannot help believing that the real difficulty is not going to be solved by neutralism. It is possible that it will be solved better by active thinking and influence through participation on all of the group in Western Europe of how they can most safely take each step which brings us into some kind of agreement with the Soviet Union. And I think the Chinese at present are as much of a problem as the Soviet Union, if not more so. So that I have a feeling that it's not a question of saying the United States shall take the full responsibility. Perhaps from an economic point of view, we are the people and who can afford it for the time being. Perhaps this is an area in which we must make a major contribution. But I don't feel that NATO's only responsibility can be carried out purely by military work. I think something has to come out of this union of the West in the way of new and fresh approaches to some kind of understanding so that we can live together.
But Mrs. Roosevelt,
on this, I think we ought to come in a moment, if you agree, to look at possible beginnings on the disarmament problem. But could we just take a moment also to look at the feeling here in Britain and Western Europe about the so-called Anglo-American alliance and the present condition of NATO? Because I think it would be unfair if we didn't allow American viewers especially, and others as well, to appreciate the degree to which there's uneasiness about certain features of this relationship. Perhaps, as a starting point, I could illustrate this by saying, having been recently in Canada, for example, there was a great deal of apprehension about the fact that people there felt, and I'm sure it's true here, that on a matter such as the recognition of communist China, to take an illustration, the American position is so inflexible that the chances of easing tension between East and West seem to be drastically minimized.
But I think you do not realize that that American position is changing. I can take any group in the United States and talk and put before them the fact that you cannot have ever real disarmament until you have total membership in the United Nations and get entire agreement from an enormous audience.
Yes, but Mrs. Roosevelt, wouldn't you also agree that at the moment NATO is in a terrible mess? You see, there's no political direction at present of NATO at all. You have an invisible strategic committee of ourselves and the United States in Washington. You have an impotent council of second-grade officials in Paris which can do nothing. You have a supreme commander taking orders from a vacuum. And you have no coordination, no centralized policies at all. In fact, we're conducting a global war, the West, against the forces of communism without any central organ of political decision.
I couldn't agree with you more. And for some time, I have been wondering, quite seriously, but this does not represent, remember, it represents a personal opinion and not a political party's opinion even. I have wondered for some time whether, as it was at the present time, NATO, which had been created to meet certain conditions which no longer exist, because you will remember that NATO was created to stop the possibility of a Russian army sweeping
across Europe. But it was hoped to expand it into a political commonwealth.
And this, I do not think at present, has occurred. And therefore, I am not at all sure that we do not need really serious revision along many ways of the NATO organization and whether it can be made really what it ought to be, which is a strong group of people thinking alike in the Western part of Europe and with America included, and actually working towards ways to find agreement.
This seems to me a wonderful opportunity for us to tell the American people what we would like them to do. And I would say, first of all, we would like them to revise their China policy. It's not because we have any illusions about China, but because we believe that the isolation of China is one of the worst things that's happening at the moment. It is this that is partly responsible for the Chinese line on the ideological struggle with Russia and their belief that war is inevitable. And therefore, we think that China should be recognized and brought into the UN. And that's pretty universal here.
Yes, I quite agree.
Then I would say, secondly, we want to see a policy in NATO which does not rely so much upon the use of nuclear weapons. This, I think, is also the view of some American forces. But at the moment, the danger is that even quite a small outbreak or attack from the East is to be met by nuclear weapons. And this really will not do. The emphasis must be shifted onto conventional and away from nuclear.
Does that mean, though, that Britain ought to be prepared also to contribute larger conventional forces?
Well, I think we should certainly be prepared to go back at least to what we promised we would do some years ago, the four divisions in Europe.
Even if it meant restoration of national service?
I don't think it would mean that. It can be done, in my opinion, quite easily by increased mobility, by liquidating some of the commitments, which I think are pretty pointless ones that we have abroad, and by considerably greater efficiency in conventional arms.
One sentence of interruption there. I think that is an illusion, you know. I do not think that we carry out our commitments in the conventional force field without a restoration of limited national service, and I think that sooner or later any British government will be forced to face up to that.
Well,
I would only disagree
on that. Yeah. I think that it can be done. Then I think, thirdly, it's enormously important that American policy should be directed against the spread of nuclear weapons within NATO. And that is one of the reasons why we also believe we should not have our
own independence. I couldn't, again, as an individual, agree with you more. I think every time we spread the ownership or the possibility of having nuclear weapons, we increase the danger of an accident, which I think is just as dangerous.
Exactly.
Although, Mrs. Roosevelt, it's curious, you know, I've attended the two American conventions this summer. It's curious how unaware people making policy in the two parties appear to be of this kind of problem. I was, on the whole, very encouraged by the lack of chauvinism and so on, although all kinds of provocation was being delivered by Khrushchev at the same time. But there's a curious blankness when it comes to appreciating the kind of worry you get here in Western Europe about, say, the universal spread of nuclear weapons.
You are entirely right, because we are far removed and we do not understand. We do not understand the feeling. I've just been in Poland. Mr. Gaitskill has just been in Yugoslavia. How many people in our country, except perhaps the little groups that came from Poland and Yugoslavia, have the remotest idea of the fears in those two countries?
Or that they themselves are in fact in range of Russian missiles at this moment in the United
States.
They don't know that because they don't want to know.
Well, of course, the truth of the matter is, and I've been wondering for a long time, that I think actually people in Europe are far safer from attack from the Soviet Union than we are in the United States, because Mr. Khrushchev himself said to me that he gave me a timetable of how long it would take him if we had a nuclear war, or this was some years ago, 3 years ago, in fact, to destroy the whole of Europe and then start on the United States. Today, I'm quite sure he would reverse his timetable and tell me how long it would take him to destroy the major points that he wished to destroy in the United States. So in that case, you in Europe would not have to be destroyed, but you would be slaves.
But you know, I don't really think the problem, I may be optimistic here, but I don't believe it is so much now the imminent danger of war. It is how to achieve peace.
Yes,
it is
I
how to get away
agree.
From the stalemate, the Cold War, call it what you like.
This is
the only other point I want to make about our view, anyway, in the Labour Party. We do want to see the West taking a much more positive line towards the settlement of outstanding disputes.
Start with disarmament, the one that Mrs. Roosevelt raised, which is obviously the all-important question. I think we ought to bring our minds to bear on the question, granted the failures in this whole field of disarmament, where, as of now, do we begin to try to make headway? Now, Lord Russell, apart from any transcendental view of how you eliminate the whole problem, how do you think we begin with the problem of attempting to make some kind of headway, however small, on disarmament?
Well, I think the government can always put forward disarmament proposals, and hitherto, they've never done so. No power has done so sincerely. I think.
How can you be sure of that?
Well, because you can see that it's so. They put forward, now in 1955, we had a most frightful shock because the Russians accepted our proposals, so we withdrew them at once. They were only put forward on the assumption that the Russians would reject them. But that is so all the way through, on both sides. I'm not saying this specially of our side, it's true on both sides. And I think one would have to try to get some agreement about disarmament before putting forward a public proposal. And also I think...
You mean far more secret negotiation and less...
Yes, and I think
propaganda.
Also this, that we should make more use of the neutrals, because at present each side puts forward a proposal and the other side has to object to it. It's part of the rules of the game. I mean, you can't kick the other fellow's football towards And so it's the rule of the game that there has to be argument. Now, I should try to get some neutral power to make proposals which appear to it to be impartial.
India, as it were, perhaps.
India, yes, perhaps. And something which would appear to it to lean to neither side particularly, and which neither side is proposing, and therefore neither side has reasons of prestige for rejecting it. And I should do this rather quietly and secretly, and get the two sides, if possible, to agree before there was any publicity. And then I think they could jointly put forward such a proposal.
Others briefly on this bill?
Well, yeah, only I think it's only fair to say that the immediate situation has been created by Russia walking out of the Ten Power disarmament.
That is so, yes.
And I mean, one must say that. They have been extremely difficult about any kind of negotiation on controls, which naturally the West want to establish until everything else is agreed, and that won't do. But I agree with Russell. I think that it would be a very good gesture if the West were to propose the presence of both China and India at the disarmament talks. I personally would go back to the Ten Power Committee. I don't think that 80 powers is going to produce anything at all.
Right.
I think that on the test thing we've made some progress, but it ought to be possible there to clear up the few remaining points which divide the two sides. And I think there again you get a small step forward. I would like to see the West also put forward the idea of a control of zone of disarmament, a zone of controlled disarmament in Central Europe, because I think this would give some reassurance to the Poles and the other countries that Mrs. Roosevelt was talking about. But initiatives of this kind, patiently put forward, expecting a zigzag policy by the Russians, because we shall certainly have that, we have to go on patiently
but
in this way.
But that won't satisfy
I'm
Germany.
Afraid that I'm in considerable disagreement with both Russell and Gaitskell on this. I'm no fan of disarmament conferences. I've seen too many of them fail. And I believe that basically armaments are a symptom of political conditions. And therefore that before you get a really substantial reduction of armaments, you've got to solve some of your political problems. And that should have priority. And it's no good talking about disarmament proposals when you've got rising political tensions all over the world. Tackle the political problems first. But there's one point that Gaitskell made which I think is extremely important. I do think that a geographical disengagement in Europe would be of immense value, which brings me right back to where we started, that I think geographical lines, geographical agreements, are the only ones that the Russians really understand and accept. So I think we ought to work for that.
I'm sorry. Our time is drawing to a close. I want to thank all three of my distinguished guests, as well as you, Mr. McKenzie, for having been with us today. I think this program is going to mean a great deal in the United States. I think it will clarify much thinking. It will bring a great many people new ideas that perhaps they should have known and talked about for a long time, and that even if they suspected them, they shoved them aside. Au revoir.
Roosevelt's guests were the Right Honourable Hugh Gaitskell, Socialist Member of Parliament and Leader of the Opposition, Lord Russell, internationally known philosopher, mathematician and Nobel Prize winner, Lord Boothby, independent member of the House of Lords, and Robert McKenzie, teacher at the London School of Economics. Television.